Okay, good evening. So we are continuing our series that we are calling the Kosher Shopping List. And the Kosher Shopping List last week was in the grocery, and we discussed the kashrus of eggs. And this week, by popular request, we are discussing the kashrus of whiskey. Now, even if we conclude in tonight's shiur that whiskey is technically kosher, and we're talking, by the way, specifically not about whiskey, but about scotch tonight, mostly, okay? And we'll define terms in a minute. But just by way of introduction, even if we conclude that it is kosher, that does not mean that it's a good idea, and we'll just leave it like that. People know my opinions about drinking in shul. Ad kan devarai, we'll leave it there.
Even on Simchas Torah.
Even on Simchas Torah, that's
right. Little old ladies like me giving a schnapps to this.
Okay, you have an exemption.
Okay.
Fine, now. A few words of introduction. Tonight, most of what I'm quoting comes from two different sources. Rabbi J. David Blake, Contemporary Halachic Problems, Volume 5, has an important article called The Whiskey Vruhaha. That is fairly famous. Less famous, but much better. The Chicago Kollel has a book called Sherry Casks. So we'll explain what that means in a second.
You will find out soon.
That's the handout, yeah.
Who published that?
But it's called Sherry Casks. It's published by, it's written by Rabbi Akiva Nyehaus. It was published by the Chicago Kollel fairly recently. This is a pretty recent, March 2012.
Oh.
So it's a year old. Now, the story over here goes as follows. What we are discussing tonight is primarily a product called scotch. Scotch is a whiskey, scotch whiskey. If you look here, the first source, scotch whiskey, often referred to as simply scotch, right? It is a malt whiskey or a grain whiskey that is made in Scotland. Scotch whiskey was originally made from malt barley, right? Distilleries began introducing whiskey made from wheat and rye in the late 18th century. All Scotch whiskey must be aged in oak barrels for at least 3 years. In other words, the government of Scotland, hence the name Scotch, has many strict rules about what can be defined as Scotch. To be defined as Scotch, it has to be aged for at least 3 years. It has to go into the bottle with a minimum of 40% alcohol when it goes into the bottle. Right? That's the definition of Scotch. Scotch also is allowed to have only the following ingredients: water, barley, yeast, and caramel coloring. No other ingredient is allowed to go in it and still call it Scotch. If any other ingredient goes in, does he snitch Scotch? Now, okay, what do we know about water? Is it kosher?
No.
Okay, New York City water and two other cities in the U.S., the water is not kosher. But water is generally kosher. Barley, kosher. Yeast, chametz. Yes, it's chametz. Yeast is kosher. Caramel coloring is kosher. So what on earth could be the problem with this? The answer is sherry casks. Now, what is sherry? Next source. Again, these sources come from Wikipedia. Right? So sherry is a wine. It is Spanish of Jerez. How Jerez becomes sherry, you'll see in a second. It's a fortified wine made from white grapes that are grown near the town of Jerez in Andalusia, Spain. Right? Now, basically, what they do in Spain is they make wine. The wine goes in barrels called casks. A barrel is approximately 500 liters. The standard sherry cask is 500 liters, and they ship the wine from Spain. It goes to Scotland, right, or England. They ship their sherry wine. Now, what happens with sherry, once it's shipped from Spain to Scotland, is then people drink it. After after people drink the wine, so then they take the casks, they take these barrels, and they sell them to distilleries where they store the whiskey, or what we'll call more precisely the scotch, in those barrels. Now, this is the traditional way of making scotch, that you take this whiskey, and right with the malt whiskey, he has beautiful pictures over here about the way they make scotch. Mamish, beautiful pictures. They spread out the barley on the floor, they dry it in a kiln, right? They use like what they call a coffee grinder. They have a whole Torah about how they do this. Then they store it in these barrels for a minimum of 3 years. Better stuff is generally stored for longer. Hence, you could buy stuff called Glenmorangie 18 years, 12 years, right? That's the amount of time it is stored in the barrels. So far, so good? Now, these barrels that they used barrels of sherry. It's not exactly clear why the minhag of Scotsmen, mikad mistana, the minhag for dore doros, was that they used these sherry casks to produce it. One of the big shilas that we're going to do tonight is to try to get to the bottom of the mind of the Scotsmen, figure out why they are using sherry barrels. Now,
One possibility is it adds color.
Another possibility is it adds aroma. Another possibility is they have no real reason why they do it. They just do it as a...
recycling before it was cool.
Right? Now, tradition. It's not a joke. Now, the traditional way of making scotch was not changed for hundreds of years. They used these sherry casks. Then one thing changed. You see, in 1975, there was a Spanish dictator named Franco, no? And Franco went out of business in 1975. And when Franco goes out of business, suddenly democracy comes to Spain, no? Democracy isn't always a good thing, because when democracy came to Spain, the Spanish government passed into Shaila that now maybe we shouldn't import our sherry in casks. Maybe we should import our sherry in bottles. Export the sherry from Spain to, let's say, Scotland, England. They should do it in bottles now. This was their hamtza'a. Why they did this? Because it would increase business for Spanish bottle makers.
Really?
Right? Also, when you ship things, you pay, the person who buys it pays by weight, no? When you ship stuff in barrels, it's going to be heavier than if you ship stuff in barrels. They'll pay more money to the Spanish people. So this is a great thing for the Spaniards.
The tariffs all depend on the material of things that are imported.
Correct. Again, I know very little about this, Torah. I'm just reporting. Now, so what happens? In 1975, there's a shortage of sherry casks in Scotland, because now they're using bottles. So the people there decide, you know what, let's try something different. Let's use regular oak casks. And let's use casks that comes from the United States, mostly bourbon casks. Bourbon comes from Tennessee, usually, right? That's the definition of bourbon.
Kentucky.
I'm an Amharic, right? That's why Dashiell's here. Right. So bourbon comes from Kentucky. It comes from America. They said, you know what? They will use the casks of bourbon. By law, apparently, the United States government has a law that you can't use a bourbon cask more than once.
Really?
You can only make one round of bourbon in a cask. So what do they do with all these casks when they're done? Let's ship it to Scotland. Right? That's what they decide. Now, this started like in 75 or so, but we mentioned that it takes a bunch of years to get a good batch of scotch. 12, 13, 14 years. Suddenly, what happens at the end of the 80s, the beginning of the 90s, is people began to taste their scotch, and they say, feh! Right? Das ist nicht meine scotch! Right? Obviously, they spoke Yiddish. Right? So they said, this isn't the scotch I'm used to. Right? We need, right, there's something wrong.
It's raw. We want
There's something wrong. So they said, maybe what's wrong is that we're not using the sherry casks. Now, that is obviously one possibility, that it is the flavor of the sherry, the flavor of the wine that is in their scotch that made the taste good, and that's why they didn't like it when they were using bourbon casks.
They
used bourbon casks.
So the
people didn't like it, so the sales of scotch went down. So then they decided that they're going to start using sherry casks again, or some combination of casks. And Ad Hayom Hazeh, if you go to a store, you could see that there will be brands, Macallan's, advertises that they use only sherry casks. Right? And others have different blends. We'll discuss some of the halachic implications of all of this. But I should also point out, by the way, just one more thing, and then we'll get back to this great history of scotch. Kashrus of scotch, or alcoholic beverages in general, is very similar to what kashrus used to be in 40, 50 years ago. You're not going to find an OU on the bottle of Glenmorangie. No? It ain't there. Is it kosher? Is it not kosher? Well, there's word of mouth. We read the ingredients, and we speak to people, and we kind of figure it out. And there are lists that different kashrus agencies publish. No? That's what kashrus used to be like. Right? Today, we have advanced a great deal in kashrus, and now you can just look for your little symbol on most products. Scotch happens to be a throwback to the old days. Mm. Right? Again, everything is very traditional here. Yeah, Orla, you had a question.
The sherry casks also made out of oak?
Sherry casks are also made out of oak, but the type of oak that grows in Spain is a different species of the oak tree that grows in Kentucky. And Ken Zine, it could be that
the oak there.
What?
Right. The oak.
Maybe it's the oak. It's possible. Yeah.
Your classic moonshine has nothing to do with casks or any of that stuff.
It has to do with porcelain, bathtubs.
What?
Porcelain, bathtubs.
Yeah, well, glass, bottles. It's just not that sophisticated. It's not that...
Again, the scotch industry happens to be very sophisticated,
okay.
At least the people in Scotland. Most of what we're discussing today is going to be about single malt scotch. That's really what we're trying to discuss. Single malt means that they are producing one blend of, let's say, barley and the amount of caramel color that they put in. It's one blend, one color. That's what all single malt means. There are single malts that are produced in a variety of casks and mixed together because they tiny that the mixing does something to it. But most of what we're discussing tonight is single malt scotch. I should also point out, by the way, very quickly, that the word whiskey can be spelled with an E or without an E, right? Whiskey without an E can only come from Scotland and Canada. Whiskey with an E can come from any other part of the world. People have ludicrous rules. Mamish ludicrous,
Canada
right?
Or Scotland?
Canada and Scotland. That's whiskey without an E, right? Whiskey with an E comes from anywhere else.
But this stuff is beyond the budget of most of us.
Okay, so one thing that surprised me about the Heights, okay, there is an awful lot of this stuff in the Heights. Right?
On my house.
Three wine stores.
Okay, how do I know this? I know this because this time of year I'm in business, no? I sell plummets. Right? What do people write down? Okay, let me review someone's plummets inventory form. I ask people to assess how much you own. Okay? Liquor, $300. Next guy.
Wow.
I always ask them, are you exaggerating? They're like, no.
That's about.
They're like, I have two or three really good bottles.
Sorry.
And this stuff is very, very common. Right? Lots of people have a lot of...
You need to get these people to be members and give lots of money to this.
They do. They're good people. They give members, but they also like drinking.
Oh, okay.
Right? And that's what we're discussing tonight. Now, so the ingredients in scotch are kosher ingredients, but the scotches today, many of them have sherry are made in sherry casks. Sherry, again, is wine from Spain. Wine from Spain is treif. Non-kosher wine is stam yenom. Yayin nesech means wine that they pour for avodah zarah. Stam yenom is wine that a guy touches, a guy moves, a guy does something to. It's not avodah zarah, right? But stam yenom is also usur. It's also non-kosher. The question that we are going to be dealing with tonight is when you make a kosher product in a non-kosher wine barrel, what is the status? Right? Yeah?
Not kosher.
Not kosher. Right? So if you're saying it's non-kosher, so basically you're saying that much of the single malt scotch is going to be treif. Certainly anything that says that it is aged in a sherry cask is going to be treif. Now, they also have sherry finishing. Glenmorangie 12-year-old as opposed to 18-year-old, correct?
Oh, God.
anyone else here know this Torah, right? We need people to know this Torah.
It's
right?
Above my pay grade.
Call some of the boys, right? So, apparently Glenmorangie 12-year-old is finished in a sherry cask. That means that they begin making it in a regular oak cask, and they finish it off for 6 months to 2 years in a sherry cask, the end of it. That would create the same halachic problem as made in sherry, because basically it is the taste, again, if the halacha assumes that the taste of the sherry is going into the wine, into the scotch, so that would be a problem. Now,
you just introduced the stam yenom, that it was prohibited, but prohibited for consumption and prohibited for benefit.
So, right now we're talking, okay, so stam yenom, the way we paskin generally is that we try to treat it like it's prohibited to benefit. May Iker Hadin and Shulchan Aruch, you could be make on getting benefit from it. Lamaisa, though, it could be that it's like I'm drinking the stam yenom because of the flavor of the wine goes into the scotch. So it's ki'ilu I'm drinking some treif wine. Remember, if I have a treif container and the flavor that is embedded in the walls of the treif container goes into my kosher food, that makes it treif, correct? Now, someone's going to be alarmed and ask, aye, but after 24 hours, any flavor that's embedded in the walls of the container is pugum, is putrid, and doesn't adversely affect your scotch. So the answer there is that wine is halachically different than every other drink. It says in Yerideya that with wine you need 12 months of absorption in a container until it goes bad. How long does it take to get a sherry cask from Spain to Scotland? So the answer is, generally, 8 months. Generally, 8 months. And they also ship the sherry casks full about a tenth of the way with sherry. They do that so that they don't crack. Apparently, it solves the cracking issue as they're transporting it. Azoigate does. So now, what are some of the relevant halachas here? So, the first issue that we're going to deal with, the major issue, is bittul of stam yenom. Every halacha, every treif item, can become bittul, generally, no? Every item, if you have enough heter, so it becomes permitted. Now, usually, we say bittul is bittul b'shishim. Right? If I have 60 times more kosher than non-kosher, it's all okay, correct? What happens, though, is that there is a din that stam yenom might be bittul b'shish, not b'shishim. It might be bittul in 6 rather than 60 parts.
Why is that?
Well, why is that is a very good question. And there are two different reasons that are given in the Rishonim. And we'll talk about that as we go on. The Ravid's reason is that stam yenom is bottle b'sheish because, right, it is no sin tam lefgam. The halacha is that whenever a taste is impacting adversely on something, it doesn't make it aser. Zuck the Ravid, wine in more than 6 parts water, is no sin tam lefgam. That's a bad taste, a bad flavor is imparted, it doesn't make it non-kosher. The Rashba and the other Rishonim disagree with the Ran, and they say that stam yenom is bato b'sheish because if you have more than six parts water to wine, so it's not wine anymore. Mm-hmm. It's called kiyuha ba'alma. It's just an acidic drink. You know, if you go to the store, Pesach time, and you want to buy some wine for the Seder, and you want to buy a good Rashi wine, 2.1% alcohol,
ooh,
no? So it won't say wine on the bottle. It's going to say a wine drink. No? You notice that? Right? Some of these very frummy wines, they are not wine according to American law. Mm-hmm. Whether you can make a Bar Priha Goffin on them is a different share. Right? But the fact is that if I have a very diluted wine, it's not wine anymore. It's just an acidic drink. That's the way the Rashba understands it. That's not the way the Ravid says it. According to the Ravid, it's no sintan lafgam. This is very important because now let's learn a few din of the Yeridea about bittul of wines. This question about mixing wine into drinks is not a new question. This is a question that the Gemara at the end of the second parak of Avodah Zarah already raises. The Gemara discusses, am I allowed to go to the market and buy apple cider from the Goyim? Or do I have to worry that Slobodan, behind the stand, is going to mix some wine into my apple cider?
Why would he want to spend the money?
So, that's a very good question. The Gemara says, well, you know, there are certain liquids that are cheaper than wine. And if you have a liquid, and then there are other liquids that are more expensive than wine. If I have a liquid that's more expensive than wine, so maybe to save a few bucks, what I'll do is I'll pour some wine in, right, and have less of that really expensive good liquid, right? Pomegranate juice could be as more expensive than wine, no? Are you allowed to buy pomegranate juice from a stand? So, Shulchan Aruch writes, Kol Elu HaMashkim, let's just go through the sources very quickly, V'chein Chomet Shoshecha Aser L'Knos Omehem, Im Demehem Yekarim, Midmei Hayayin, I can't buy these drinks if they are more expensive than wine, She'anu Choshashim Shema Irev Bahen Yayin, Ad She'ein Shishim Levatloi. We are Choshish, we are concerned, that maybe you mixed wine in, and there won't be 60 times more pomegranate juice than wine to be mevatalet. That's a very important line, right? This is a line that the Rama says that you need 60 times more. Right? And then Shulchan Aruch comments that this halach of pomegranate juice is only true if you buy it from the store. If you take it out from the barrel, it's okay, because he never would have put wine into the barrel, because if you put wine into the barrel, it will make the pomegranate juice go bad over time. And that's a din in Shulchan Aruch. And the Rama writes later on also that wine sediment, right, if you have 60 times more other drinks than wine sediment, it's going to be kosher. That means the Rama is paskening that Stam Yenam is bottle in 60. Aye, didn't we say before that it's bottle in 6, not 60? And the source that's bottle in 6 is here, Yerideh Kuf Lamedalat Se'if Hei, Kam Yeheba Mayim Yeheba Hen Kedei Levato Tam Hayayin, Shisha Chalokim Kenegdo, only 6 times. So isn't this a stira? It's a stira. So it comes along the Shach, right? And the Shach writes like this, Dafka Yayin Esach B'mayim is bottle in 6. Avo B'yayin, top of the second page, B'yayin, O B'tavsho, Shemashpicho, Vaday Oser Hako Ad Shishim. So the Shach is saying a Yesod. The Shach is saying that when I have wine mixed with water, all I need is 6 times more water than wine. But when I have wine mixed with other liquids, then I need 60 times more. Then it's batel b'shishim. That's what the Shach says. And the Shach says, and that's the defense of the Rama, and that's why the Rama says 60. Now, the Taz argues on the Shach, and on the Rama, presumably. The Taz says, Tomati, how come you need 60? Don't we paskin 6 is enough? So the Taz answers, you know what? Really, 6 is enough. And when we say 60, it's just because the source over here is a Mordechai. The Mordechai holds you always need 60. But the Taz says, I paskin 6 is enough. This is very important. Halacha l'maisa, no? If I have a sherry cask, it's wine, treif wine from Spain. Right? It's not made by the Rambam. Treif wine from Spain, or the Abarbanel. So I have treif wine from Spain. So then it's with scotch in the barrel, right? If it's 6 times, so then it could be, it's possible, that there's going to be 6 times more scotch than the amount of wine that was absorbed in this barrel. 60 times you'll almost never have. No? It says in Shulchan Aruch that when it comes to bittul b'shishim, we assume that pots do not have 60 times more than the contents of their walls. If you want to figure this out based on trigonometry, you can. My mind would split because I hated high school. But the fact is, that you're not going to have 60 times more. You might have 6 times more. So if I pass in like the Taz, right, maybe I have a kula that this scotch is going to be kosher. Scotch made in sherry casks might be kosher. But if I pass in like the Shach, I got a problem, right?
We learned a few weeks ago that bittul doesn't work if you desire the
exactly. Okay, great, great comment. I want to talk about that in a few minutes. That's going to be, I have a source about that coming up. Great.
That's intrinsic to the
Tyson. That's another problem. But so far we are trying to defend the practice of holy Jews, the Heilige Yidden, who make a lechayim, or go to a fabringen, and they drink a little bit of scotch, right? So that's what we're trying to do. Right, what's the practice based on? So far we have a Taz. We have a Taz. Okay. Shmach Lokes, Shach versus Taz. Now, who do I paskin like, Shach versus Taz? So traditionally in Judaism, we paskin like the Shach against the Taz. Rav Soloveitchik is quoted as saying that the reason why we paskin like the Shach against the Taz is because the Shach was a little kid. He was 21 years old. He wrote his Sefer on Yerideya. The Taz is the 75-year-old Gadol Hadar. But the Shach can't publish his book because he doesn't have smicha yet. So he decides to go and try and get smicha from the Gadol Hadar. So he travels to the Taz, and he says, Mr. Taz, Rabbi Taz, can I have smicha? Smicha, please. So he says, well, do you know Yerideya? So he says, I wrote this book on Yerideya. Please look at it. So the Taz looks at the book, and the Taz realizes that this book is pretty good. And the problem that the Taz had is that the Taz was in the process of writing a book himself.
Oh, God.
Called the Taz. So, according to tradition, the Taz said, you know what, I'm not going to give you smicha. And he felt that by not giving him smicha, he wouldn't publish his book called the Shach. Right? Good idea. Right? So then what happened was, right, Rav Soloveitchik said that because the Taz did this thing and it was so mean, so that's why we don't paskin like the Taz, that's why we paskin like the Shach. That's what the Rav said. And the Rav, even in his later years, never taught Taz.
Wow.
The Rav, when he said Yerideya, didn't teach the Taz. Actually, in his early years, he didn't teach Taz. In his later years, he got very bored, so he started teaching a few Tazes. But that's what the Rav said. Now, when Rav Schachter published the Sefer Nefesh HaRav, he included this story in the Sefer Nefesh HaRav. Rav Meir Goldwicht takes the book Nefesh HaRav, brings it to Rav Shlomo Zalman Auerbach and says, here, look, Rav Herschel Schachter is a Rosh Hashiva in YU. He published a book about the Rav. Why don't you read it? So Rav Shlomo Zalman was very smart. He sits down, takes only 25 minutes to read the book. He says, it's a wonderful book, but tell Rav Herschel Schachter that story about the Shach and Taz isn't respectful of the Taz and he should take it out of the next printing. Tradition. The Rav said it from his grandfather.
Okay, so we're
going to
believe that.
So did he take it out?
No. The story is still in the book.
Was he came back and told us after what happened?
Yeah. So.
Well, it was his grandfather.
I don't know. But the fact is, traditionally, we pass in like the Shach over the Taz. This case happens to be a situation that many poskim follow the Taz, not like the Shach. Many poskim say that all you need is 6 times, not 60. Right? The many poskim include the Chochmas Adam. He paskins like the Taz here, not like the Shach. There's a Magen Avraham that's interesting. The Magen Avraham writes that really he thinks you should need Shishim 60 times, but Zuck the, like the Shach says, but Zuck the Magen Avraham, that's only true of their wines that used to be stronger. Our wines today are weaker, and therefore it's enough with 6 times. Right? So basically, why are our wines weaker? That we know from Hilchos Birchas HaMazon, that the din used to be that they used to have to
bench, right?
That you'd have to dilute the wine in order to bench, because the wine wasn't potable beforehand, their wine was so strong. We know that this was true, that our wine today is much weaker than their wine used to be. In the winemaking, our wine is drinkable, their wine was it was turpentine.
Once we're admitting that it's built up with shishim, then the fact that the wine is strong enough to do with it, then it's
the standard. So, apparently the Magen Avraham is assuming that the reason why it is batel b'shishim, right, is because it gives off taste. It's so strong, it gives off taste until 60 times. Uh-huh. Our wine today is weaker, so therefore it won't give off taste more than 6 times. Right? In other words, that seems to be the approach that the Magen Avraham is taking. Rav Moshe Feinstein has an interesting suggestion, the next source that we quote over here. Rav Moshe says that he thinks that the Nekudas HaKesef is the Shach, right? Right? In other words, Moshe is saying a very interesting thing. Moshe wants to say that maybe, even though the Shach holds that wine is bottled in 60 times, not 6, 60, by other liquids besides water, but, says Rev Moshe, maybe that applies only to other liquids that are not strong, not sharp liquids. But when I have something like whiskey, which is a strong liquid, so then it might be bottled in 6 times, even according to the Shach. That's what Rav Moshe says. But, and even if, Rav Moshe says, and even if this is not true, you should still paskin like the Taz. So what we have is that Rav Moshe and the Chochmas Adam, and the Rav Moshe and the Chochmas Adam, and the Magen Avraham, about our wines today, are all saying that all you need is 6 times, and that could possibly be a kula for drinking scotch that's aged in sherry casks. So far, so good? There's a few problems with this, and then there's going to be one super-duper problem that this book points out. This book is awesome, right? So, a few problems. Problem number one is, there is a din in Yerideyos in Tzadi Ches, next source. You have a kol ha'isurin ha'nohagin b'zman hazeh kula misbatlin b'shishim. All prohibitions that we have today are nullified in 60. Besides, chametzam pesach and yayin nesach, right? Which we will explain later on. Obo vajcha isa eno nosin tam b'kedera. Avom nosin tam b'osa kedera. If I have something that is called milsa da avida la taima, something that gives off flavor, so it won't be bottled even with 1,000 times. Vilachain, therefore, melach v'tavlin midvarim da avida la taima im asur machmas atzmam, it's not bottled b'shishim. If I have salt, that's usser, or I have spices, that's usser, right? Because the flavor will be recognized of the salt error of the spices, even if I have 60 times more. How much salt goes into a pot? Very little, no? But if I have a little bit of treif salt, how do you have treif salt?
Huh? What's treif salt?
How do you have treif salt? Someone bows down to it, makes it have odazara, right? Treif salt. Or you have treif... This is very positive. No, or there's a whole discussion over here about melech habalua midam. Okay, if I have salt that they used to draw the blood out of the meat, and then you put it in your food. Why you would do that, I don't know. It happened. Right? So...
Same thing with spices.
Or spices. I have treif spices. Or let's say... I don't know.
There's guys in the mirror apartments. The mirror apartments.
Right. So you have
what?
Okay. Well, you have treif spices.
How can it be treif?
You use it. You know. You did it.
Spices?
I don't know. You have treif spices. You have treif salt. You have treif salt.
What?
If you dry it in the same thing where you're like making pig jerky.
Right. So I have my treif salt. I have my treif spices. So that won't be bottled. Oh, why? Because the flavor of the spices or the salt is noticeable. Question. What about sherry casks? Is the flavor of the wine noticeable in... Right? So they switched from bourbon, right? So that's one possibility.
So the fact that they noticed it.
The fact that they noticed.
That the sherry didn't part.
Or maybe not. Maybe, in order to be noticeable, the Minchas Yitzchak discusses this in his tshuva. It's the last source I give you on the last page. Minchas Yitzchak discusses, what does it mean to be noticeable? Does noticeable mean that I taste it and I say, I could taste the spice? Or does noticeable mean that it contributes a certain flavor, would taste different without it?
Is that the same thing?
No. right? Can I identify, right, by spices usually? I could taste, I could say, you know what? I taste the garlic. You taste it, right? The garlic is there. Alternatively, I could say, I don't taste the garlic, but because the garlic is there, it changes the flavor of the mixture after. Right? I'm sure in cooking there's some better terms for this, but you understand what I'm saying. What's interesting over here is, and this issue, by the way, came up in Torah journals like 40 years ago, 50 years ago. Rabbi Pinchas Teitz.
Oh my.
Of Elizabeth, New Jersey. I remember him because as a kid I used to sing in the JEC choir on the Daf HaShavua program once a year. He gave a Yiddish shir on the radio.
Yeah.
Right? Rabbi Pinchas Teitz, he was great.
Rebbetzin
Blau's father, right? Dr. Blau's father. So Rabbi Teitz noticed that many of the whiskeys contain a certain amount of treif wine in them. And therefore he went to give hashgacha on some brands of whiskey that would not contain any treif wine. Right? And then there was a whole discussion in the Torah journals back and forth about whether this was necessary or not, because the wine that went in was nullified b'sheish. So this whole discussion that we're having is a discussion in the journal Haparadays in the 1940s.
Oh.
Right? Now, it happens that Rav Moshe was not discussing sherry casks. Rav Moshe was discussing taking a little bit of wine and pouring it into the whiskey. Right? That was the case over there. That was what they called some blended scotches, or like that. Mm. Right? Blended drinks, generally today, a blended drink means it contains many different drinks. That's the definition of blended. So Rav Moshe is discussing blended, that may have contained some wine. He's not discussing sherry casks, but a lot of the analysis is the same thing. Fine. So now, one of the issues is, do I assume that there's taste of the sherry in the scotch? Well, that depends how I define taste. And that's the issue that the Minchas Yitzchak raises at the end of his tshuva. The Minchas Yitzchak wants to say at the end that he's not 100% convinced that it should be a problem, because l'maisa you don't really taste the wine. And in those discussions in the Haparadis journal, they said, you know what, if you really would taste the wine, no Orthodox Jew ever would have drunk this stuff. So obviously the fact that Orthodox Jews, I take a backwards argument, the fact that Orthodox Jews are drinking it shows that you don't taste the wine. Okay, I mean, whatever, take it or leave it. But that's one discussion. Next discussion, next potential problem over here with the scotch that is in the sherry casks is a din of Ein Mevatlin Isser L'Chatchila. There's a din in Yerideya that I can't intentionally take a treif item and mix it in, even if it's going to be bottled. Ein Mevatlin Isser L'Chatchila. Now, it says in Yerideya... Okay, we'll come back to the taste in 1 minute. We'll mention another point for Moshe. But Ein Mevatlin Isser L'Chatchila, as it says in Yerideya, and even if it... Heter falls in, etc. You can't emulsifin alav heter kdei levatlo. You can't add additional heter. Fine. If avar ubitlo, if you are mevatan isra l'chatchila, so if it is done for you, it's aser. L'mishan nisbato b'shvilo, it's aser. So if you're cooking food for me, and you add a teeny bit of pig in the food for me, right, even though it's going to be batul b'shishim, great, it's usher for me to eat it. Rabbi Kiva Eger discusses, let's say you're doing it not for me specifically, you're doing it for a commercial enterprise. You're doing it because you want to sell the stuff, so you add a teeny bit in order to sell. Is that doing it for me or not? So Rabbi Kiva Eger is inclined to be machmir, the Taz is inclined to be mekol. The question of the sherry casks might be that issue also. When the people in Scotland are making this whiskey, and they use the sherry, do they have in mind that some Yiddel in Williamsburg is going to make Kiddush Shabbos morning on this? Probably not. But they... What? Okay. So, do they have that in mind?
So much business from the Jews, then.
So, one possibility is they get so much business from the Jews, so they're making extra scotch for the Jews. That's one possibility. Another possibility is that the rove is goyim, Right? Another possibility is that Lamaisa, they're not making it for me, they're making it to sell. So they're doing it for themselves, not for me. It's for Zichalein. They want to earn the profit. Right? That's Machlokas Rabbi Akiva Eger in the Taz. So there's a few wrinkles that we have here. One wrinkle is 60 versus 6. Another wrinkle is if it gives taste. A third wrinkle is, are they doing it for me? And even if it's going to be bottle, maybe it's also if they're doing it for me. I should add that when it comes, that Rav Moshe Feinstein assumes that issues 1 and 2 are connected. Rav Moshe has a chiddush. He says 60 versus 6 is connected to the idea of that if it gives taste, is it going to be us or not? Moshe says that he's inclined that the reason why wine is bottled in 6 parts is because when you have more than 6 parts water compared to wine, it's not called wine anymore. Zakhtar Moshe, even if it tastes like wine, it's not called wine. If that's the case, even though it's no same time, even though the sherry would be giving real taste, let's say, into the cask, into the scotch, still it is no same time. Now, these issues, many poskim say things that seem to me a little strange. Some poskim say that they think that the sherry doesn't contribute flavor, it contributes odor. Others say that the sherry contributes the color of the scotch. Apparently scotch in sherry casks is a more amber color. The lighter colored scotches do not come from sherry casks. That's what
how
they
much
say.
How sherry could be in the cask?
We'll talk about this. Now, they use it over and over again? Probably. But the halacha is that it keeps, it remains there, right? That sherry is there, and it remains giving off its taste. The halacha doesn't assume that there's a difference between time 1 and time 2 and time 3.
But you would think that the first pressing, as it were,
is stronger.
Would have a lot
you
more
you would think that, but,
it,
but it's clear in Yeridea that we don't assume that way. So now, yeah, Orly.
But wouldn't 12 months have passed between the second?
But it's
the
only
second
considered
time?
12 months if it sits in the barrel for 12 months and nothing else goes into that barrel to reinvigorate the flavor. But if I'm adding extra stuff to the barrel, fine. Now, growing up, when I heard the discussion about whether you could drink single malt scotch from sherry casks, I thought it's a simple discussion. According to Reb Moshe, it's okay, because Reb Moshe passes straight like the Taz, and Reb Moshe holds that once it's bottled in 6, it doesn't matter if it gives flavor. But according to others, it's a problem. That's what I thought growing up. So then, this afternoon, I read this book called Sherry Casks, A Halachic Perspective, and chapter 4 is titled Establishing the Facts. The sherry cask contained the ratio necessary for nullification. So he goes, and he says, the size of the sherry cask is 500 liters. Right? That's the size of the cask. The external dimensions are 1.17 whatever. Right? The internal dimensions. He gives you the whole Torah. And you know what emerges from his analysis? You don't have 6 times. You have 3.76 times. Nebuch. This is very bad. So the barrel was originally filled all the way up to the top, right? And the halacha views it that we assume that the entire barrel is permeated with sherry. The entire barrel is permeated with sherry, so then, right, I need 60 times more than the 500 liter content in that went in, right? 6 times more. I don't have it. Huh? I don't have 6 times more in the content than the volume of the walls of the barrel. So this is the problem that they had.
What's the problem?
So what?
It's less.
It's less. If it's
so why is that a problem?
So it's treif.
Huh?
If I don't have 6...
You have 6 of the whiskey.
If I have 6 whiskey, 6 or more whiskey versus the wine, it's kosher.
You're talking about the whiskey.
But I have less than 6 whiskey,
okay.
It's going to be treif. So it could be that my sherry casks are going to make my scotch treif. This is my problem. This is a problem. So the author of this book says he asked many people, and they gave various suggestions. Rabbi Heinemann said that he thinks that the wine in the sherry cask doesn't go the entire thickness of the wall of the cask. It only goes halfway or so. And he cut a cask open to show that the wine is only halfway. So this guy who originally wrote this book, this Rabbi Niebuhr, said, oh, that's really cool. So then he takes a trip to Scotland. And he goes, and they let him in one of these places. Knees him in the flaws. By the way, these people, if you think the Coca-Cola factory is secretive about their recipe, you should only meet McAllen's. They are mamish. This is Sisrei Torah. Unbelievable. But he was able to see an actual chefetz of a sherry cask. And he touched the outside. And
it's moist.
It's moist from wine. There's wine there. On the outside. That means that it went through and through. The wine permeated all the way through the entire thickness. And the svar that Rabbi Heinemann said is wrong.
It was before they put the whiskey in there, I mean.
He touched the cask before they put the whiskey in, and it was you could see the wet from wine on the outside.
Maybe they transported it on the side, and then they write it.
But Lamaisa, if the wine goes through and through at any point, it's going to probably stay there, and then we're in trouble.
Why do we assume that we have to calculate the entire volume and not just the original volume of the wine?
So we have to calculate the entire volume of the walls of the cask.
Even though the amount of wine that was stored in the cask is much less than that.
Well, no, the wine that was stored in the cask originally was full all the way to the top. Well, that's much more than that. There's much more in the contents of the barrel than the walls.
But you take the original contents of the wine, subtract the wine that came out, and find out what you have left.
But once the original content was in there, and as long as something remains in there, that original content remains vibrant. As long as something remains in the barrel, so it's going to be vibrant. And we assume that the entire wall of the cask is permeated with treif wine. So, why? So the why is because once it was there and it was thoroughly permeated, it remains thoroughly permeated. It was full at one point.
Reasonable.
Right?
If the thing
the
was
barrels
full.
Were full at one point. Right? And the barrels, the way they used
enough,
to transport sherry, used to also be completely full because they're actually selling the sherry in the olden days. Right? It was mamish full. Oh. So Rabbi Shlomo Miller of Toronto, the Rosh Kollel in Toronto, he had a different suggestion why it's mutter. You see, this halacha of the barrel absorbing the taste of wine, the wine is not hot. Usually in Yerideya, you only absorb when it's hot. We spoke about that, I don't remember, in this room or in the room downstairs, when we used to have it downstairs. But right, that's the din. It only absorbs usually when it's hot. The stuff that absorbs when it's cold is called kavosh. There is a machloikas between the shach and the taz about whether kavosh completely absorbs, or where the kavosh only absorbs kedei klipa. A klipa is like if I pour hot liquid on something, only the outermost surface absorbs, no? That's the din in Yerideya. So the Taz assumes that kavosh only absorbs kedei klipa. So Rabbi Shlomo Miller says, even though most posts can follow the Shach, but the Chochmas Adam writes that Me'ikar Hadin Yepaskin like the Taz, and therefore it's only a Kedei Klipa, and if it's only a Klipa, if it's only the innermost surface of the barrel, so you have six times more scotch compared to the wine that is in the Klipa of the barrel, and then it's going to be okay.
But wood is porous, unlike metal.
What?
Wood is porous.
The wood is porous.
So
you can feel it on the outside. So it's a difficult, difficult thing that he's saying. But that is one of the things that he does as a Lima Tzuchos. Basically, where we are up to right now is as follows. Sherry casks, this book argues, are a problem. It's a problem because you don't have six times more. Right, we have this one kula of Rabbi Miller. It's very difficult. It's a difficult kula. There are some other kulas he proposes equally, if not more difficult. So he thinks sherry casks are going to be a problem. I should point out that Rev Moshe, who is not talking about sherry casks, Rev Moshe has a tshuva here to Rabbi Teitz. I give you the tshuva. Let's just read one paragraph. Rev Moshe is talking about whiskey that you put some wine into it. Rev Moshe writes about blender. right, which is under your hashgacha. Va'ani omer lo yasheya. I tell you, you're doing a good job. Yashakochacho bazeh. Sheyia ro'i lamahajin lizar midvam shetzach horas chacham, etc. Va'af ani sha'ani matir. Rav Moshe says, even though I permit this type of whiskey, where they add a little bit of wine to it, I permit it. Still, nisarani ba'atma milushtos blender. I don't drink this blended scotch myself. Rak b'chabura shelo lemechsi ki yoyhara ha'yisi shosem mashu levare chamesubim kanohog. This is an amazing Rav Moshe. Moshe is saying, I myself assume it's permitted, but I'm machmir not to drink it. But I don't have the chumrah when I have to make a lechayim and give people brachas, I'll take a little sip of the stuff in order not to embarrass people. Right? And then Rav Moshe writes in this whole tshuva that he thinks it's permitted me ikar hadin, but a baal nefesh, someone who's worried about their soul, should refrain from drinking the type of blender scotch he is mentioning for some of the reasons that we mentioned. Maybe the taste is there. Right? Maybe it's considered Ein Mevatlin Isser L'Chatchila. Maybe we follow the Shach that you need 60 times, not 6 times. So if Moshe says he thinks it's all permitted Me'ikar Hadin, but a Baal Nefesh should avoid it. But Rav Moshe is talking about, you have 6 times more at least. It could be that by the sherry casks, you don't have 6 times more, and therefore it's a problem. So the conclusion of the Chicago Kollel booklet is that one should avoid scotch that is made in sherry casks. However, we should know that most scotch is not completely made in the sherry casks. Very few are. Very few. The ones that are made in sherry casks are Macallan's, right? Macallan 12-year-old. It says on the bottle, it's exclusively matured in sherry oak casks from Jerez, Spain. That one should be avoided. Anything that is finished in sherry casks should be avoided. That would be the Glenmorangie La Santa. It says on the thing, it is finished in Olasuro sherry casks. Correct? That's what it says? I'm just reading from this book. Something that is double matured. Double matured means first they do it in a regular oak cask, then they do it in a sherry cask. That's also going to be a problem. However, that is very few, very, very few scotches. He says many scotches, they break the batch up. Some of it is in sherry casks, and much of it is in bourbon casks. Why? Because sherry casks are very expensive. So they don't want to use it more than necessary. Bourbon. So he makes a cheshbon. He says that any scotch that we assume is less than 66.5% sherry is going to be okay. So the way he makes this whole calculation, basically, he says single malt scotches that are a mixture of bourbon casks and sherry casks. For example, Glenfiddich 12-year-old, he says, is going to be permitted because it's going to be Batel B'Sheish. And it says on the barrels that it is matured in the finest sherry and bourbon casks. Similarly, Glenfiddich 18-year-old, right, is also okay. Also, right, Macallan Fine Oak 10-year-old. Macallan 12-year-old is a problem. Macallan 10-year-old is okay. Right? This is the way he gives the Torah, because it is made in casks that are seasoned with sherry and others seasoned with bourbon. So basically, his Torah is that it's going to be okay. Then he also writes that you should know that there are some scotches that are made with kosher wine casks. There is a brand called Brookladdie.
Really?
Brookladdie is spelled, ready? B-R-U-I-C-H-L-A-D-D-I-C-H. Brookladdie is a scotch that is made in kosher sherry casks that come from the Carmel Winery in Israel.
Oh, that's cool.
So then he has a whole discussion of who says Carmel takes off trumas and meisers.
And how much does this stuff cost?
What? all this stuff is really expensive.
Rabbi, use whiskey for Kiddush. Do you have to drink a whole tumbler full?
So that's a machlekas between the Taz and everybody else. The Pashtus is that you need to. There is a big quote of the Maharsham writes that he saw many Hasidic Rebbes make Kiddush on a very small cup of it. The basic cheshbon is that they assume that a liquid that quenches my thirst, I need a revius. But something like scotch, I'm not drinking it to quench my thirst, I'm drinking it to fill me up, or right. The equivalent. So right. Then I don't need a revius, then maybe I need only a kezias. The problem is that would be assuming that scotch is technically a food, not a drink. If it's a food, you probably can't make kiddush on it at all. So it's a very different, that's what Rav Shechter points out. But the minhag of many chassidim is to make kiddush on a small cup, based on that maharsham, but it's very difficult. So basically what we are suggesting, is that Rav Moshe's leniency does not apply to sherry casks based on his numbers. Again, my understanding of trigonometry goes back to 11th grade, and I didn't understand it then either. Mm-hmm. So I can't. I didn't test his numbers, but I trust him on that. But if that's the case, that you don't have six times, so then the only heter is going to be if it's not purely a sherry cask. If it's purely a sherry cask, it'll be a problem. Many kashrus agencies, he did a lot of work for the CRC, right? They tell you which ones are exclusively in sherry casks, which ones are not. So that is what I want to say about sherry casks and scotch. And we should have a good week. Next week, I think we'll be talking about a Pesach topic already. In honor of Yontiv. I'm not sure what. Wine?
L'chaim.
L'chaim. Okay, thank you for coming.